Nathan holstered his blaster.
I won't hide. Besides, Sullivan is an expert at disguises. He can even mimic another person's voice so that in the darkness you think it's them. Damnedest thing. I heard that was how he chilled the last Baron of Bull Run Castle.
I could interrogate, everybody knew.
An assassin was something novel to the hunter. Barroom brawls were more his kind of fight. Walking to the edge of the roof, Nathan gazed upon the bustling ville.
Not necessary. Sullivan can use gloves and cosmetics to hide his green skin and wigs to cover his bald head. But there's one thing he can't alter. His height. Take troops, 10-on-10 formation. The second group stays away from the first to give cover fire. Then go through the ville and strip naked anybody you find over 6 feet tall, men and women.
The remaining sec men murmured in apprehension.
We'll also double-check any crypts. Pretending you don't have legs would be a good way to hide height.
Nathan nodded. A sec man confidently brandished his blaster.
Oh, we'll capture him, Baron. Have no fear of that.
Nathan turned away from the ville.
Capture? Don't even try. When you find a bald man with greenish skin, chill him on sight, which means a headshot, one in each eye, then set the body on fire. Hopefully that will be enough.
Shuddering and clanking, the APC crept along the smooth shore of the North Carolina River Basin. The soft sand rose high, almost to the rims of the seven tires. The eighth hung in tatters off the rim, flopping about uselessly as the wag forged onward with ever-decreasing speed. With the tip of his knife, Ryan removed the damp rag from an odd-port and looked outside. On the horizon, black clouds filled the sky, and orange flames licked upward from the raging inferno of the cornfield.
Far enough?
The interior of the wag was misty with smoke and reeked of pungent human sweat.
Yeah, we're a good mile clear of the cornfield. Stop here. Let's see how much of a wag we still have.
Sure.
Christie grunted, fighting the clutch to shift into park. The gear refused to cooperate, so she tried neutral and managed to kill the engines. The cacophony from underneath the metal floor receded and finally stopped. Climbing into the turret, Doc threw open the top hatch, and cool, fresh air flooded into the APC.
Ah, ambrosia of the gods.
Fanning herself, Mildred sported a smile.
That's redundant.
Yet still true, madam. Pro veritas libertas.
Rising from his seat, J.B. pulled at the sticky clothes clinging to his body.
I'm going to see what the damage is.
He got a toolkit from a storage locker under the seat. Ryan removed a canteen from the wall.
I'll cover you. Christy, prime the chain gun in case we get visitors. Doc, Dean, start transferring the gas from the external cans to the fuel tank. Mildred, Jack, you stay right there. It was a hell of a knock you took.
Never better.
The teenager on the floor moved his arm to expose the bloody bandage on his head. His normally pale skin was flushed pink, his shirt damp with sweat. Mildred had given the teen 2 aspirin for the pain and checked the focus of his vision. She said it had to do with concussions and brain damage.
Glad to hear it, because you look half dead.
Fuck you.
As JB exited the wag with Doc and Dean right behind, Ryan exchanged a look with the physician. Mildred nodded, waving him on.
Go fix this thing.
Stepping over the youth, Ryan took an AK-47 from a stack and checked the blaster. There was a full clip in the breech, and he had a good dozen loose rounds in his pants pocket. Climbing out, Ryan walked around the wag, checking for any signs of external damage. The armor plating was dirty and scratched with blurry streaks from where soft lead bullets ricocheted off the hull. Blood was splattered everywhere from the blue shirts they had crushed. While Dean stood guard with his Browning in hand, Doc was busy untying the fuel cans from the charred netting. On the ground, a pair of legs jutted from underneath the vehicle, and JB could be heard muttering curses to the sound of metal hitting metal. Resting the stock of the AK-47 on a hip, Ryan knelt in the sand.
How's it look?
Found a busted axle, and we're definitely losing oil and hydraulic fluid. Dark night, this thing is a mess.
What are the chances it'll carry us to the next Shiloh?
Considering what was done to this wag, it's a wonder the thing got us here.
Fire blast.
Ryan glanced around. They were trapped with a dead wag in the middle of nowhere. Not good.
Can you fix it?
Don't know, but I'll try. Only need 4 wheels to stay mobile.
Good thing we have 8.
7, but that should be enough.
Need anything?
Ryan had great belief in the talents of the armorer. The man was a master gunsmith, an expert at booby traps, and could fix anything made of steel that rolled or floated.
Some light would be great.
From a box strapped to the hull, Ryan retrieved an oil lantern. The reservoir was half full, more than enough. Igniting the wick with a butane lighter, he trimmed the flame to something manageable and passed the lantern under the APC.
Thanks.
No prob.
Doc passed a fuel can to Dean.
My dear Ryan, would you suppose it is safe enough for us to chance a campfire? I fear we shall be here through the night, and nobody could possibly notice our small column of smoke amid that Dantean conflagration.
Nights get cold. Be nice to have hot food.
The boy hugged the container with both arms. Setting the bottom of the can on his belt buckle to help with the weight, Dean waddled around the wag with his precious cargo. Ryan nodded.
Keep it small.
An explosion sounded from the east, and Ryan spun about, his weapon ready. A fireball rose skyward from the blanket of black clouds masking the wildfire. Then the Deathlands warrior felt his heart race as a small mushroom cloud formed above the cornfield, the sea winds dissolving the eerie sight almost as soon as it formed. Backing closer to the wag, Ryan listened to the crackle of static on the radio, waiting to hear voices, but minutes passed in silence. It had to have been some ammo cooking off from the heat. The way that Hummer was bouncing around, the Blues could have dropped any number of weapons or Brens. Christie spoke unexpectedly from the turret.
Gaia's demise.
Ryan stared up at her. She seemed strangely tense and nervous.
What was that you said?
Gaia's demise. The end of the world.
There's rising smoke, lover. Any hot explosion will make a mushroom cloud. Nothing special.
Staring at the distant fields of fire, Christie made no reply. Her hands poised on the rapid-fire cannon, long hair billowing in the sea breeze.
Lend me a hand.
Mildred climbed from the APC with an armload of boxes. Shouldering his long blaster, Ryan took the top crate and found it full of pots and pans.
The fire is just for warmth. We shouldn't stay here longer than necessary.
Mildred placed the box on the ground and removed some glass jars.
I'm not making dinner. Going to brew some coffee. Help us stay sharp. Been a long day and it's not over yet.
Sounds good.
Ryan felt his stomach respond to the possibility of eating. Damn, he was a lot hungrier than he wanted to admit.
Maybe we can break open a few of the MRE packs. Hunting would be pointless. The fire will have scared away any game for miles.
Mildred lifted a silvery foil envelope into view.
Way ahead of you.
Taking a seat on a rock, Ryan balanced the AK-47 on his lap and watched as she ripped open a package and spread out its contents, carefully inspecting the smaller envelope of beef stew, another of coffee, sugar, a log of processed cheese, crackers, salt, pepper, chewing gum. The MRE food packs were meals ready to eat, military rations from long before Skydark. The Mylar foil was chemproof and airtight. If the packs were stored carefully, the condensed food would last forever. But the tiniest pinhole could turn the chow into deadly poison. They occasionally found a few MRE packs or self-heats in the redoubts, and sometimes they were edible, but more often they weren't. These came from Overton, and the foil was in perfect condition, almost brand new. Doc dropped a load of gnarled gray sticks on the ground.
Behold, madam, driftwood aplenty. Is this enough, or shall you require more?
That's enough.
Mildred started to whittle on a piece of driftwood with her belt knife. She piled the shavings together and carefully lit them with a single match. The flickering flame almost died, then brightened and spread across the dry wood. She added small sticks to the growing fire.
There we go. Just need some water for the pot.
Dean set down the last fuel container.
I'll go get some. The wag is topped off.
Fine. Get it from the basin. The water here is fresh, fed by the river, not salt.
Mildred opened a second envelope and poured the contents into an iron pot.
Be right back.
Grinning, he grabbed